We're going to take a quick turn right here. I see the calls holding. We're going to get to you, but I want to bring on my next guest, Dr. Eric Cornaday. And he wrote this fascinating piece about seven ways to get rid of poverty in Black America. And there's one of them in particular that really, really stuck out to me. And I am so pleased to have him joining us today. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Cornaday.
Thank you so much, Mr. Seaton. And just first name is Eddie. Last name is Cornaday.
Cornaday. Did I pronounce it right? Cornaday? Did I say it wrong?
Well, it happens a lot,
okay.
But that's okay.
Okay, I apologize.
No worries. And first name, Eddie.
Okay.
Thank you so much for having me. And I just another bit of information is this report that was written is by my colleague, Dr. Joshua Bandock. He's the head of policy at Illinois Policy Institute.
Right.
And produced the Common Ground Solutions to Empower Chicago's Poor, a model for America's cities.
Okay, perfect. Now, and that was the piece that I read that my PR person gave me. And you had 7 points, 7 bullet points that were on, that were listed in this article. And number seven really, really resonated with me. Can you read number seven for our listeners?
Absolutely. Number seven is promote family formation and stability, including by making it easier for people to follow the success sequence of education, job, marriage, and then children.
That is, and I talk about that all the time on our show. I could go through any list of data and statistics that really talk about why that is so important. So you read it. Go ahead and expound on that a little bit for our listeners.
Well, I'll say this. It's fascinating. When I asked the question, it was asked of me first, had I ever heard of the term success sequence? And when I was asked that, I hadn't heard that as yet. I was like, no, I hadn't. Then it was explained to me just in that sequence, education, job, marriage, then children. And immediately I
said, say that one more time. Say that list one more time.
Education, job, marriage, and then children.
Okay.
And I know at the top of your show you were talking about the importance of education.
Yes, sir.
When I heard it, I was like, wow, that's a great idea. It's a great idea because it's a God idea.
Right. And you said education, work,
yes.
Marriage, then children.
Then children. And these are think tanks on the left, like the Brookings Institute, the Cato Institute. And on the right, there's consensus around this and the other six indices that are talked about in the report, where people think there's a mutual agreement that this is a way to move forward. The thing about the success sequence, though, is it might be a little bit loaded when we bring that out to the community. When I talk about this in the community and ask the question, have they ever heard it? No one has really ever heard of it framed in that way. But when you talk about success singularly, everybody wants to be successful. I don't know a human being that doesn't want to be, but there is a model and method out there of how to achieve that. It doesn't mean that it's necessarily the fact that we all go that way, but if once we find that rhythm, the possibilities are endless. It says too, the research does, and this is from the Brookings Institute, is that anyone who follows this model has less than a 2% chance of falling into poverty.
You know what's interesting about that, Dr. Cornaday, that when you look within the African American community, when you look at single, we'll say unmarried Black women who have children under the age of 18, that demographic experiences poverty at a rate of 39.4%.
Mm-hmm.
Black
mm-hmm.
women, when they mm-hmm. get married, the probability they experience poverty at a rate of 6.7%. So when you're talking about education, work, marriage, and then children, let's talk about step one. Why is education the foundation of this rubric that we're talking about?
Well, when you mentioned W.E.B. Du Bois, Booker T. Washington, Malcolm X, and Dr. Martin Luther King, they all had in common a basic education that they had experienced. It's kind of like it's the Mount Rushmore of educational and community success kind of wedded together. But education, as I've understood it, it's to draw out, is to actually be able to unlock the gift that you have, help you to understand how to use the talents that you've been given to be able to pursue your purpose at the highest level. Now, if you begin to do this, you become more civically engaged, historically engaged, and politically engaged as well. So it's important to use education as that tool to anchor you for future success. And that's probably the best way to say that. Education anchors you for future success and possibilities for prosperity.
You know what's so fascinating about that? I had another quote that I was going to use, and it almost mirrors exactly what you just said. I often think about when I talk to young people or I hear young people who are in high school and they're taking algebra or they're taking geometry or they're taking earth science, and they say, I'm never going to use this in real life. And here's a quote from Albert Einstein. True education is about teaching how to think, not what to think. What to think.
Yes.
Education is not the learning of facts, but the training of the mind to think critically and independently. Albert Einstein said this, I have no special talent. I am only passionately curious. This man who is remembered in history and who is revered as having written modern day physics said, I have no special talent. I am only passionately curious. So would it be fair to say that education is less about what you're actually learning? It's more about training yourself how to think. So to your point, you can engage civically and politically and in the other facets of your life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And here's something that looking at the success sequence also unlocks. Many people, especially when we're talking about poverty, success for them is survival.
Indeed.
And when you're thinking only of survival, you're thinking about your immediate needs.
Indeed.
You're thinking about critical needs, and you're thinking about dire needs, because the one thing that you don't want to get happen to you is to fall over into the dire category, and now you're going to do anything that it takes by any means necessary to survive.
And what's so profound about that is that you typically, as you see countries, I'm just talking about the history of civilization now, you typically see more advanced societies engaged in the activity of abstract thought. But when you're just worried about survival, you don't have the luxury of having the academic exercise of abstract thought. That is so fascinating. We've got a quick commercial break that's coming up here. You're listening to The David Seaton Show. We're talking to Dr. Cornaday, Eddie Cornaday. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. We are back. You're listening to The David Seaton Show. We're continuing our conversation about Black America, education, and what we need to do to improve our overall situation. Joining us on the live line is Dr. Eddie Cornaday, and we're talking about number 7 on the list of 7 things that the Brookings Institute identified as ways to combat poverty in Black America. Did I get that right?
No, actually, the Illinois Policy.
I'm sorry. Illinois.
Yes. No worries.
Thank you.
No worries.
Thank you. And I read the Illinois Policy. I read their website often, and they do a fantastic job. So we talked about education. We left off on the importance of education is not what you're learning, but it's teaching you how to think. So let's go to the second step there. After education is work. Why is that an important second step after education?
Well, there's dignity in work. And the importance of dignity is something that is an innate aspect of who we are as human beings. And work gives dignity, but it's not only that it gives us dignity, right? It empowers us to engage in being able to move forward in the purpose and plans that we have. When we can find and use work to establish ourselves in the world. One of the things of that this report talks about is that there are more and more people that are leaving the workforce, and they're able-bodied and have the capacity to work, but they don't have the desire to do so. So there's this dignity quotient that work provides innately, if you will, that allows for us to be able to see other possibilities with regards to how we have used our education. The reward of education is a particular type of job, wages, careers. That opens up the door to relationships, marriage, children, and being able to have stability, whether that's middle class or moving on beyond, to keep you in that 97th percentile of people who have that success and do not fall into lower the 2-3 percentile of being subject to poverty.
Do you believe that the overall hyper materialism has convoluted the intrinsic and, dare I say, ineffable value of education?
That's a great question. I think that many of us, not all of us, but many of us, see work as a tool to get things versus work as a method of unlocking our purpose. And so we work, we labor, yes, for material goods, but we don't work to unlock our purpose. So our jobs are more about 9-to-5, what I can get out of the employer, versus it being something that I can use to enlarge my territory, give me dignity, to pursue things that are bigger than my current condition. I think that work unlocks the imagination.
Come on, Dr. Cornaday. Now, you know, if you had the choice between driving a G-Wagon and living in a million-dollar mansion on the beach and being able to take vacations whenever you wanted to, if you had a choice between that and living in a middle-class, middle-class lifestyle, but you discovered your purpose, everybody would choose the former, no?
I don't think so. And maybe I'm being an idealist. But when I think about
you're being quixotic, perhaps just a little bit.
I'm not saying that they are mutually exclusive. I'm not saying that. But I do think that what I am saying is that if we follow these seven principles, we can, and a lot of times people will go into poverty, will be forced with poverty if they're pursuing a material good as opposed to pursuing, I believe, the spiritual capacities that we're talking about gaining if we do things in good and right order.
I'm inclined to agree with you. I do know, and I've told my daughter this, that I talk about this thing that I kind of came up with. I teach my daughter, and I teach when I talk to young people about when they're trying to figure out what they want to do with their lives. I tell them to find the intersection of what they like to do, what they're good at, and where the opportunities are. And in an ideal situation, if you can find the intersection of those three things, you will be happy regardless to whether or not you are, you have a material abundance.
I agree. I think material abundance is really lower level thinking.
Mm. Wait, stop right there. You said something really deep, and I'm coming up on a break. I want to let's start right there. As soon as we come back, we're going to check in with Robin. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The David Seaton Show. Let's get back to the quiz. So we talked about work. I'm sorry. We talked about education. We talked about work. And one of our regular listeners just posted on Facebook, Glenn Scott Hayes, he posted 1 + 1 = 3 if you don't use protection. So the next two steps in this rubric, we've got education, work, marriage, then children. 70%, a little bit over 70% of black children in this country, born in the United States, are born to single, unwed mothers. And we already said that that those households experience poverty at a rate of 39.4%. Why is it important that marriage precedes procreation?
Well, there's, of course, I'll say this as a believer, is that God has sequenced our lives in this particular way and set it up so that we can have success. Two-parent households are known to actually produce children that are going to have a better opportunity to achieve success. That's just a fact.
Why?
Now, because that two-parent influence allows for that child to grow up with the capacities that allow him or her to be able to reflect what it is that they're learning in the home. Not only that, two-parent households have more stability economically, and those things lead to giving a child a better chance to be able to be successful in the world. I'm not saying, you know, and that's a low conflict household. We know all households aren't situated in the same way, and I think a lot of it is because of the success sequence just hasn't been discussed at the kitchen table. Most often what is happening is that these kinds of sequences aren't being, they don't happen sequentially. They happen non-sequentially. They people take divergent paths to success. But how do we talk about success? And what are the models of success that ensure the best possibility for a child's success in the future? I believe that a two-parent household stabilizes many things around education, around work, around family that allows for this to happen. Now, back to this success sequence, though, most people don't live their lives sequentially. There's nothing wrong. We're not saying here that's a non-starter. If the baby comes before work, or the baby comes before education, if the baby comes before marriage, a lot of people are just living out these sequences simultaneously versus sequentially. It doesn't mean that success is not there and available to them, but it does make a better argument that if you do these things in this order, you're able to actually achieve the things that you want for yourself and for your family. I hope that answered that.
No, absolutely. But let me respond. Like some of, because we've had conversations like this on the David Seaton show before, and we will have single black mothers who will respond to say, I don't need a man. I'm the father and the mother. I can do it all by myself. I don't need any help from a man. What would your response be based on the success sequence? What would your response be to that statement?
Well, in the Center for Poverty Solutions and looking at our poverty center report, we promote family formation and stability. A two-parent home, a traditional model of that, understanding the world that we're living in. But the reality that families are central is both intuitive and decidedly controversial. And so that's a very controversial statement. But it is one that is anchored in our community. And so what we have to do is use opportunities for value transference that happen. That's an educational piece component, and that's why education is important. But I would say to that particular person and that particular argument is that there, while that might be something that allows her to survive, the real piece is to get into the success sequence so you could thrive.
And I think it's really important. Here's what you made me think when you said that, because you said education. And so often, I know when I have conversations on this show, so often when people hear the word education, they automatically think about the four walls of a school. But you're being educated as a child when you're being brought up in a home where you see a mother and a father who are married, who are husband and wife, who are working together collectively and cooperatively for the success of the family. The child is being educated by that example. So even though you're not, even if you don't necessarily say to your child, get married before you have children, because this is part of the success sequence, them, that child just seeing their parents being married, they're still being influenced, they're still being educated about a preferred way to be successful.
And I think that's the key word there, the preferred way. Because, and I think the best statement to all of the different kinds of, formations of what are considered families in our community and the world today, we need to support strong family structures. And this is something that you'll find in the report, that we need to support strong family structures and support those who lack them. And so someone that might say, that might not have the feeling that they might feel like they have a strong family structure and not necessarily know where there might be lack. And that's one of the issues around poverty, is that benefits cliffs as well as safety nets oftentimes make up for the absence of a nuclear family, a two-parent home. And so the need for male presence, the need for a father can be challenging sometimes. My children are the product of a non-custodial relationship, right? They didn't grow up with me, but I made sure that they knew that they had a father.
Absolutely.
Now, there are a lot of situations like that where people have kids, they divorce, or they have kids, they never get married, all kinds of divergent paths. But if you're thinking about this success sequence and you want success for yourself and you want success for your children, then you're going to find, you're going to get to a point where all of a sudden you know that you need the education, you find the education, you get the work, and you start to right the ship. I believe that once you find a hold of it and you find a pathway to success, it's important for you to understand that sometimes you have to change your mindset. You find out when you're exposed to things that you don't necessarily know that you're what you're lacking until you're exposed to it. And I think that that's the value proposition that the Center for Poverty Solutions is trying to offer up. Not that we have the solution, but now that we're talking about these kinds of things, I go out into the community and work with organizations that are frontline and doing this kind of work on the ground so that we can hear what actually works best and what people are bothering for. And how do we take and create a whole new level of research and outcomes from research that transform into policy and legislation and activities that actually do heal families, heal communities, and heal our society.
Dr. Cornegate, we're going to take one more break. I'm going to come back, and I'm going to challenge you on what you just said a little bit. When we come back, we're going to take a quick break for traffic and weather. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The David Seaton Show. We'll be right back. Dr. Cornegate, before we went to the break, and let me just read this one post here. This is from Devin. Devin wrote, the studies are so old. They're going to tell us now that they need two parents, when in the 90s they told us differently. And as I was listening to you talk about marriage, and then I kind of chimed in and I said, you know, this is the preferred path to success. It sounded like you were almost speaking with just a slight bit of trepidation when you were espousing and or endorsing the traditional family unit and the chronology of marriage before children. And the reason I'm even pointing this out is because oftentimes in the Black community, when we have these conversations, we sit down and we behave as though this is some amorphous giant jigsaw puzzle that we need to discover the meaning of life to figure out the best decisions and the preferred decision and the best decisions to get the outcomes that we want. All we have to do is look at other ethnicities and communities that have that have achieved the success, and you see everything that you're talking about now. When you look at all of the ethnicities in the United States, the most successful ethnicity in the United States socioeconomically are Indian Americans. And they do everything that you just laid out. They prioritize education, STEM education in particular. They prioritize, after that, work, mostly entrepreneurial, starting businesses. They always get married. They have children within marriage, and they have a very small percentage of divorce. Therefore, when you look at that particular ethnicity, you see a high amount of success. All we really need to do is just find the groups that have the success that we want in the percentages that we want them, and just replicate that behavior. No?
I agree. I would say that it wasn't necessarily trepidation that I was responding with. Okay. It was with compassion. Compassion and empathy, understanding that so many people that end up in these studies have survived to a point, you know, some seeing their children move on, some losing their children. And so I have a lot of compassion for our community to put them in a position where their ears are closed down to the possibility of a different way of living.
But taking that path, do we take, by erring on the side of being sympathetic and empathetic rather than holding each other accountable, by being too sympathetic and empathetic rather than holding people accountable, are we in danger of people not receiving the corrective message because they lack the vision? They lack the vision of the success, the success series that you just laid out. That's more of an abstract. You have to trust in the abstract without the tangible outcome to say, I'm going to get educated, then get a job, then get married, then have children. Is that accountability? I mean, have we become too empathetic in the Black community?
Jesus said, forgive someone seven times.
And sure.
I think that this is a conversation.
He also said, don't cast your pearls before swine. Because he knows swine doesn't understand the value of the pearl.
Well, that's true. But I'll just say this, is that this is a conversation starter at the Center for Poverty Solutions. Going out into the community and asking, have people heard of this before? and then locating them in this conversation so that that number one thing that you talked about at the top of the 3 o'clock hour is that education can start. And just one other little footnote, when you talk about Booker T. Washington, he took people out of slavery, gave them indispensable skills and undeniable value, and was producing more millionaires out of Tuskegee Institute than Harvard, Yale, and Princeton combined.
Mm.
And so when we're talking about taking people out of something, this is that next movement. I think that here at the first quarter of the 21st century, this is the opportunity to turn the page and begin to reintroduce educationally something that's been left out and locked out of our community for a while. Now we can begin this conversation. I believe this is a conversation starter, a value opportunity for a value transfer that uplifts all people, no matter where they might be in the sequence, and provides them with the solutions to get out of poverty or to prevent themselves from ever falling into it for the next generation.
Dr. Eddie Cornaday, this has been a fantastic conversation. We've got to figure out a way to continue this conversation, because this information is what more of us need. We need to have these conversations. I'm coming up on a break. We are going to be in touch with you. Everybody, now we're going to go back to the calls, and we're going to, this last hour, Doctor, I hope you have an opportunity. If you do, hang out for this, you know, listen to this last hour, because it's going to be good. I promise you. I promise you. Thank you so much for coming on today. Great conversation. Everybody, we're coming to your calls next. We're keeping this conversation going about the condition. Dr. Cornaday just laid it out. You don't want to be in poverty, you need to get educated. Why are we doing worse in 2024 than we were 150 years ago? We're going to check in with Robin. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The David Seaton Show.